Well, good morning. My name is Tom Spencer, and I'm the secondary principal at Logos School in Moscow. And the title of this talk this morning is Changing the Culture. So, why don't we begin by asking God's blessing on our time this morning. Father, I thank you for your goodness to us day by day, for your steadfast love, for your mercies that are new every morning. Father, I pray that you would guide our thoughts today. I pray that you would help us do some thinking about the schools and about the events and about the rules that we have at our schools. I pray that you would help us to see what the children are learning through each of these activities. And I pray, Father, that you'd make it clear to us if there's any change that ought to be made. Father, that you would guide us as we consider these things before you, because our desire is to teach things to children that are inconsistent with your truth, to teach them to think your thoughts after you, and to bless them by what they learn. Father, we do thank you for our time together. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. I think I want to start, even before my introduction, by encouraging you to think about your school calendar and the events on your school calendar and the activities on your school calendar. And I'm not really interested in, and my purpose isn't to persuade you to do necessarily what we've done in the particulars. That's not my goal. I'll talk about Knights Festival. I'm not here to persuade you to have a Knights Festival. I am here to persuade you to do the same kind of thinking that we have done about your school, to ask yourself why you have certain events, what your children learn from those events, and what events you ought to have if they need to be changed. That's really what it is that I want to do this morning. But I'd like to talk to you about some of the biggest changes that we've made in the Logos Secondary Program in the past few years. Logos School just finished its 21st year. We had our first large high school graduating class in 1992. So we've been at it for a while, even with the older kids, and last year made some significant changes and some things that we've been doing for many years. But I want to tell you about what changes we made, how we went about deciding what needed to be changed, and how we implemented those changes, and mostly, I think, why we did those things, why we thought it was necessary to change. We wanted to change the culture. Culture is the best word I know of the secondary program. So let's start by discussing what we mean, or what I mean when I'm saying culture today. There's two possible ways, there are more than that, but two possible definitions of culture that are particularly helpful and germane to our topic today. The first definition of culture is culture may be defined as development or improvement by education or training. Development or improvement by education or training. Okay, education is something we're familiar with, obviously. But culture may also be defined in a different way as the sum total of ways of living built up by a group of human beings, which is transmitted from one generation to another. The sum total of ways of living built up by a group of human beings, which is transmitted from one generation to another. And both definitions will be helpful to us this morning. The first definition speaks directly to the idea of education. The second, to our cultural traditions. Students' minds, obviously, are developed by education. And I want you to think back to the time when you first started to meet together to create your schools, and think about some of the questions that you asked yourself and some of the planning that you did relative to education. When we started our schools, we asked ourselves a lot of questions, and we thought very carefully about exactly what we wanted our kids to learn. What did we want our students to learn in our schools? What courses should we teach, and at what grade level? And remember, I'm a secondary administrator, so I think there's a little more variability there than in the elementary grades. We were real careful about reviewing textbooks. You know, which one is the best textbook for use in our school? We created curriculum committees. I mean, it was an evidence of the care that we put into the planning of our curriculum. We were going to ask people to give a lot of time to plan curriculum, and we recognized that that was an important task, and the committee is evidence of that. And it was right to give those matters such careful consideration. That was a good thing to do. Those are important issues. One of the first questions that parents, prospective parents, would ask when they came to our school and likely when they came to your school is, what curriculum do you use? Okay, that's a big deal. It's right and it's good that we spend time asking ourselves what students should learn in the classroom. But the reality is, students are going to learn many things while they're attending your school. And some of the lessons that they will learn are planned, and they're the result and the fruit of your planning, and there are many lessons that are unplanned that we maybe haven't as thought about. Many of the lessons they will learn will be a result of planning, but those aren't the only lessons that will be taught. And there's a phrase called the hidden curriculum that some authors have used to address some of these other areas of learning that exist in our school and in your school. There is a hidden curriculum that exists in all schools, I think, in addition to the planned curriculum of the classroom. The phrase hidden curriculum describes probably two other types of learning, at least, that occur in a school. First, kids learn from the way they relate to one another throughout the day. They learn a lot of lessons from how they treat one another, whether or not they are kind to each other or considerate of each other. I mean, starting in the elementary grades out on the playground, you know, how they play together. In the secondary grades, thinking about what they say to each other, okay? Do the things they say build one another up? Are they profitable for encouragement, or do they tear one another down? Kids can say things to one another that are very cruel and hurtful. In the secondary, they learn some things, depending on the culture of your school, encourages boys and girls to pair off in exclusive relationships and boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, or whether the culture of your school discourages that. Whether cliques develop, you know, when you have small numbers of students in classes, and maybe there's an in-group and some kids who are left out, they learn from these things. At the secondary level, they influence each other in many areas of popular culture. Okay, movies, music, clothing, things that they hear on the radio. Okay, all that is part of the hidden curriculum. All of that are things that kids are learning from one another that may not be the result of anyone's planning at the school. And it's important that we would take time to ask ourselves what kids are learning in that area. But the solution to those issues would probably be addressed in some different topics, not necessarily changing the culture if I defined it today, but maybe those are things that you observe the kids and you watch how they're treating one another and you think, I'm not sure this is right, and maybe that becomes a focus of a chapel, okay, or some teaching that you're going to give to all of your kids, or maybe it even becomes a focus of some of your Bible curriculum. The other type of hidden curriculum relates to consequences, planned or unplanned, seen or unseen, resulting from the activities that are on your school calendar. Your school calendar, because it's a school, likely has a number of events included on it that are held every year. They are annual events. And if your school is like our school, once you hold an event one year, it becomes a tradition. Okay? It seems to be firmly planted, or can do that very quickly. How do these events end up on our calendar? Sometimes, all too often, I think, and I have done this, we have added these events to our calendar because they were common to government schools in our area. Okay, this is what schools do. Okay, this is the kind of thinking. Didn't ask enough questions. When parents and students come to our school, they assume they're going to find the same kind of events and activities, that might not be wrong, but we need to have a better reason. But they come, kids and parents come to our schools and, well, what kind of extracurricular activities do you have? You know, do you have a school prom? Okay, the other schools have a junior prom, a senior prom. Do you have those kinds of things? These events can seemingly, they can spring up on their own. It's not difficult to get them started. Perhaps you had a parent come and say, I would be willing to volunteer to plan this event for your school. You know, and it's hard to sell somebody that wants to volunteer for you. No, we don't want you to do that. You have the event for a year or two, and then you've got a tradition. And why did that event get put on the calendar in the first place? Probably go back to that second definition of culture and that will explain it. Remember, culture is the sum total of ways of living built up by a group of human beings, which is transmitted from one generation to another. The event ends up on our school calendar because it was on the school calendar of the parent school when they went to a school. It's what they reason that schools do. We do things because they are traditional to schools, and we haven't stopped to ask ourselves, why are we doing that, or should we be doing that at all? We assume that the events are right, good, and proper. But sometimes we assume that these things are true and we haven't questioned the validity of those activities. Sometimes it's hard to see the hidden curriculum in your own school. It's hard to see it, especially for those of you that have been at the same school for a number of years. I've been at my school for 18 years. You become used to the way things are and you lose a bit of a sense of objectivity. It's just hard to see. We might have a difficult time imagining how things could be different than they are. Well, we can't change that because, and maybe they're pragmatic arguments. Or we might have a personal investment in one of those events. We might really like one of those events, or we might have been responsible for some of the initial planning or the description of those events. And there's a couple things that you can do that I found helpful to help you gain a bit of a sense of objectivity. One, if you have any families that are new to your school, particularly those that have come from classical Christian schools in other areas, is to listen really carefully to them. Sometimes they'll come and they'll have an event on your calendar that they're not familiar with, and they'll ask you some questions about what is this thing that you want me to send my child to. Okay, give me some reassurance that this is a profitable thing. But talking to parents who are new to your school can help you find some of the hidden curriculum in your school, because of the comparison they can make to what they knew before to what they see in your school. Another way that you can help perceive the culture of your school, maybe one of the best ways, is to go and visit other schools yourself. Okay, I've had a few chances to do that in the last couple of years, and that's really profitable. Sometimes there are things that I think of that I'll think, well, that would be a good idea, but I wonder how that would be received by students, and I might be more skeptical than I ought to be that could be done. And you go to another school and you see, wow, that school's doing it. So you can do more than you think sometimes. But the comparison between the two schools may reveal something to you about your own school. And I would encourage you to do that. There's a writer named Fenwick English who does curriculum audits. That's his profession. I don't know that he's a Christian, but he's written about hidden curriculum. And he gave some examples in his writing of the kinds of things that teach lessons that we don't tend to think about. But the purpose of trying to figure out what it is in our school that's teaching the lessons is so we can ask ourselves the same kinds of questions about these things that we did when we planned the curriculum. Okay, that's the purpose. You can be sure that the lessons being taught by the events and the activities are the ones that you want your students to learn. Okay, English said, schools are places where the values and ideas of the dominant classes in any society transfer them to each succeeding generation. Schools are places where values and ideas are transferred. Okay, what are some of the values that we teach? Okay, here's some specifics that he gave as examples of hidden curriculum. First, he mentioned flags. Is there an American flag in each classroom in your school? Do the students say the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of the day in your school? Why? Okay, why do you do that? Do you do it because it's traditional? Because in the schools that we grew up in, the flag was in every classroom and the students say the pledge at the beginning of the day. Okay. Have you thought about whether or not you ought to do that? Okay. I'm not saying, by raising this question, and I don't think English was either, but regardless of what he was doing, what I'm not saying is trying to discourage you from doing those things. Okay. Saying the pledge or displaying the flag, what are you trying to teach your kids? Okay, it's not a matter of whether you should do this or not. That's not really my point. My point is, do you know why you're doing that in your school? Okay, that's the point I'm trying to raise here. If someone asked you, why do you do this in your school located in this place, can you tell them? And what I'm trying to encourage you is not to answer because it's tradition. Okay, I want you to find a better reason than that. Another example that English gives are symbols. Okay, the name of your school. a lot of you have thought really carefully about when you created a school, what you should call it, because it communicates something to all the people in your school community. Your school mascot, if you had one. Okay. He noted that almost all the traditional mascots tend to be animals of strength or power. Tame, gentle creatures. Okay. But your school mascot might teach a lesson to your kids. He said about mascots, I think, symbols can convey powerful messages. Symbols are usually sacred cows. Their meaning or importance is not to be contested. School mascots are symbols that take something intangible, school spirit, and make an abstraction, school spirit, more concrete. Okay. Third example. This was interesting to think about. And then he comments on the way furniture is placed in the classroom. Most often it's arranged this way to provide an easy way for teachers to control the kids. Okay. He says schools are places where the following values are exalted and expected. Obedience, docility, passivity. Obedience, docility, and passivity. The rewards go to those who do this well. He had a list of rules that he says he's never seen posted in a school classroom. And one of them that I remember was students are encouraged to question the opinions of their teachers. I thought that's a great rule. Okay. Obviously, they should do that respectfully, but he's never seen a teacher have a sign up in their room saying students are encouraged to question the opinion of the teacher. And he said another rule like that is students are encouraged not to believe everything that's written down in a textbook, just because it's written down in a textbook. Okay. Docility, passivity, and obedience are virtues. And the rewards go to those who do that well, who display those virtues. And these are some of the things, if you think about it, that make school more friendly to female students because they cut with the grain of females more than they do with males. Okay. So those are some of the examples he gives about the hidden curriculum at your school. Okay, why was change necessary at Logos? After having a full-fledged secondary program for 14, 15 years, why did we make changes? I think because we finally realized that some of the things, the events, the class rules, the awards that we had started years ago were teaching lessons that we weren't content with when we thought about it. I would categorize our changes into two groups. There are two categories. First, there are some changes that we made that are proactive. We thought about what values we wanted our students to learn, and in particular, values related to etiquette and manners. And then we asked ourselves, how can we create more opportunities in the school day to teach those values? This required that we make changes. That was one category of change. We didn't have a problem anywhere that we were trying to address. We just weren't satisfied that we were doing enough, and we wanted to do more than we were. The other categories of change came in the realm of events that we, maybe saying we had problems is too strong a word, maybe not, but we weren't content. We weren't satisfied with all the results. The lessons that our students were learning weren't the ones we wanted them to learn once we thought about it. Okay, the events, especially Spirit Week here, weren't teaching lessons that were always positive. They were also stumbling blocks to some in our school community. The Spirit Week events weren't necessarily bad. They certainly weren't immoral. But they drew attention away from the good things that were occurring at the school. It made it difficult for some people to see the positive aspects, the high standard of teaching and learning that was occurring. It was clouding their vision because they saw some things in Spirit Week that they didn't like, and that prevented them from appreciating the good things that no one would dispute were going on. So we made changes. I suspect that each of you might be able to find at least one change needed in your school. Maybe you need to create more opportunities to teach some virtue. Perhaps you have an event that teaches lessons that you don't want your students to learn. Okay, I encourage you to reflect upon this. See if there's something that ought to be changed at your school. I want to talk about three specific changes that we made at Logos this past year. The first was in the area of student dress. You might know that when Logos was founded over 20 years ago, the school board did not adopt a policy on uniforms. Okay, you weren't around to tell us that that was a good idea, so we did it on our own and we didn't do uniforms. Okay, we began with the requirements that student dress in a manner that was neat, clean, and modest. We had a dress code and that was pretty much it. Students have to be neat, clean, and modest. 5 years ago, the board decided to make a change in the school clothes policy. they decided that Logos would shift to uniforms, but the implementation was going to be slow and methodical. So the first year it was decided that students in grades K through 1 would wear a uniform, and every year as those students grew older, Logos would add a grade. So the first year it was students in grades K1, the second year it was K2, till this past year it was students in grades K4, next year it'll be all the students in grades kindergarten through 5th grade will wear uniforms. Eventually, as things stand now, all the students at Logos in grades K through 12 will wear uniforms. Okay, why take so long to implement that change? Well, if you've ever tried to make changes in your dress code, you probably know how emotional some people are when it comes to the matter of student dress. Okay, it's a hot topic, and it can be a raw nerve for some people. Those of you that started schools with a clear policy on uniforms have a real advantage. If you started with a uniform policy when you started the school, people could know, okay, I'm going to go to the school, and one of the things that's required here is that my kids wear uniforms. And there wasn't as much debate on it, I suspect. I could be wrong. That's an area, student dress, rules affecting student dress, that's really difficult to change. This is overstating it, but we're sort of stuck with the decisions that we made in the beginning. It's overstating it because we can change, but there's a price to change. Last year, I remember a school in Tennessee contacted me. The school had uniforms already, and some in the school were saying they wanted to shift away from uniforms to a dress code, and they wanted my input on what I thought about that. And I strongly encouraged them to stay with the uniforms because of how hard it would be if they decided they didn't like the dress code to go back to them. And so even though we didn't have them at our school, I said, if you've got them, you've already fought that battle, stay with it. Okay. Recognizing the way emotions are attached to this issue, the Logos Board decided to go slow, and I think they were wise to be patient. Not everyone, not every family, not all the kids are in agreement with the new policy, but changing to a school uniform didn't create a huge ruckus. We didn't have families leave over the issue. So they may not be persuaded, but I think the board was wise to be patient. So last year at the secondary level, I'm still dealing with school clothing guidelines. One decision that was made, one change that was made in the school clothing policy was that the two administrators, the elementary principal and the secondary principal, are now responsible for recommending particular changes to the dress code year to year, keeping in line with the broad guidelines that the board has given us. The belief is that it's not the board's place to sort out the picayune details of what color, how long, how tight. They set the direction, and it's the principal's job to keep us on the right track. The board gives me some very helpful direction. They help me identify the changes that needed to be made. They did that every May. They come to Logos and they spend half a day visiting the classroom, and then they came and said, this is what we saw and this is what we'd like you to change. It was a fresh set of eyes, and that was helpful. One of the challenges in working with a school clothes policy as opposed to a policy on uniforms, if you have a dress code or a school clothes policy, you're always on the defensive. Okay, you are never on the offensive. You are always reacting to whatever the trends are in the popular culture relating to dress. And it's pretty obvious that the standards in popular culture are not favorable to Christians, particularly in this past couple of years in the area of modesty with young ladies. But with the school clothes policy, you're always reacting to whatever the latest fashions are. Baggy, tight, sloppy, short, etc., whatever it is. Okay, you're always reacting. A year ago, when the board completed their annual visitation, we talked about their observations, and the topic of modest dress came up. Okay? Board members were real specific in defining what they meant by modesty. Not too much thigh, no midriff showing, and it really helped me as an administrator to have them be so specific. So I'm encouraging you board members, if there's changes like that, spell it out for your administrators. It will help them. So modesty was one of the real focuses of our changes last year. And if you're familiar with the fashions for young ladies, you understand why that was a battle that we had to fight. When we rewrote our school clothing guidelines, we just got really specific about what a modest dress was. Okay, we didn't want anything that revealed the midriff, either while standing or sitting. So we just put that right into the guidelines. We're real clear. If you sit down and it pulls up your back, okay, that doesn't fly. They also, and this sounds pretty lame, they were not to wear anything that was shorter than one hand width above the knee. Okay, it sounds funny, but it was really helpful to be so specific. Okay, it was a real useful guideline because instead of saying we don't want something that's too short, we told them what too short was. I assure you, I didn't measure anybody last year, and I don't intend to, But, you know, the teachers could look at that and say, you know, that's too short, and it worked. We had a common language and a common standard. Okay? How we enforce these guidelines is the thing I want to finish with before we go on to Spirit Week. In the summer, I mailed home copies of two articles on modest dress to every family. One was written by Doug, and the other was written by Nancy, and these were in an issue of Prudenda that was published online. It wasn't in print. The articles, especially Doug's articles, were really blunt. I mean, they were very direct. Okay, about what was modest, and they were to the point. My desire, what I wanted to do by sending it home to the parents, was giving them some context for the rules that they were going to see. Okay, thinking about biblical principles. I think the information was helpful. I received some positive comments from parents about that. They enjoyed that. And I should tell you, one parent returned the articles to me with a handwritten note telling me that when they wanted this kind of information, they would ask for it. So that happened too, but that was okay. I guess they read it. So the best aspect about how we handled the change was that we were really clear in communicating what we wanted, and we gave them some information about why. Okay. We didn't have a debate. We didn't have a discussion with a group of parents. We decided what we thought was right, prayerfully. We communicated that humbly, saying we realize we're fallible, but this is where we've taken a stand, and we communicated what we want. We tried to answer as many clarifying questions as we could. I kept track of all those questions in a separate file just to see if we could rewrite things better. But once the year began, then I met with the secondary teachers to plan how we would enforce the changes. It is really important that we keep our word to kids. And after making all this fuss about changes, I didn't want the kids to learn, well, I don't have to listen to what they say because they aren't going to be diligent and consistent in enforcing their word. Okay, so we really wanted to do this well. And at the secondary, that's a lot harder than at the elementary because your kids don't have one teacher the entire day. They have four or five teachers throughout the day. And we wanted to be consistent. I gave every one of our staff members a sheet of forms like a notepad. The teachers were to use those forms as clothing tickets. Okay, that sounds kind of silly too, but it worked. We have a rule that the students have to keep their shirts tucked in. If the shirts weren't tucked in, the teacher gave the kids a note. They also gave me a note telling me who they'd spoken to, and I just kept track of those things in a list in my office and of how many times each student had received a note. And at the beginning of the year, for most of the kids, that was enough. Oh, you guys are paying attention to this. Okay, you're keeping track. And we had good compliance for most of the kids. Toward the end of the year, we had to increase the discipline a little bit more, primarily, and I might have, maybe should have been doing this all along. That just came by mailing the tickets home to the parents. Here, I want you to see that the teacher had to speak to your child today about the way they were dressed. If teacher saw a young lady in immodest dress, the ticket didn't go to the student, the ticket came to me. The reason for that is sometimes modesty involves a judgment call on somebody's part. And I might need to go get my secretary or female teacher to say, go look at this young lady and tell me if you think she's modestly dressed. With one exception, if a male teacher gave me a note that a female student was immodestly dressed, I always addressed that because I didn't want there to be a stumbling block in front of the male teachers and have responsibility for that. Most often, all I would do is leave a copy of the ticket in the student's locker. This was a low-key way. I didn't embarrass them, but communicated this needs to change. And at the beginning of the year, that was enough. Sometimes we ask kids to put on sweaters. Sometimes, in extreme cases, they had to go home to change. But most of that information that we sent home took care of most of the problem. Okay? Most of the problem that we faced in modesty was when kids were sitting, the shirt was riding up their back. It also helps that Moscow had a really cold spring last year. Okay? It snowed on Easter Sunday in Moscow. I kid you not. That's true. So who could dress for the warm weather? Because we didn't have any. By the spring, we had a few chronic offenders. I would say, you know, just 5%, maybe. So in the spring, I had to start calling girls into my office to have a discussion. We really are paying attention to the rules. I really do mean this. Do you have any questions about what your responsibility is here? Kids. And this teacher, you know, mentioned to me the dress of this student. So I was constantly reminding the teachers through the year, let's be faithful. Let's show the kids that we're just going to be consistent. What will the issue be next year? Not sure yet. I like to take my wife or have my wife take me through the shopping mall sometime in the summer to see what's coming. Okay, and get prepared for it. Okay, we haven't made that annual pilgrimage yet. In a couple of years, we'll have uniforms in the secondary for the first time. There's two things that I want to do when we adopt uniforms. I want to have uniforms that will show distinction between the elementary students and the secondary students. I think it's important that they not be the same. And I also want to adopt uniforms that show distinction between boys and girls, masculinity and femininity. That's a value that's important to me. So what are we teaching in the area of student dress? Obviously, what I've talked about this morning, I want our young ladies to learn modesty. We also want them to learn consideration for others. There were other things we did besides modesty, just tried to raise the tone. We wanted the kids to think about, when you dress yourself in the morning, don't just think about you. Think about all the people that have to look at you all day long, and how can you show consideration for them. One last comment before we leave the topic of dress. The teachers, with some gentle leading for me, and truly it was gentle leading, imposed a uniform of sorts on themselves every day, Tuesday and Thursday, last year. They agreed at the beginning of last year to try this for 1 year. Actually, they did it the spring before. They said they would try it for a year, then they'd reevaluate in the spring and see if they wanted to continue. The men wore khaki slacks, a light blue or white shirt, and a navy blazer. We purchased two sets of ties that became staff ties. The ladies also had a uniform, although it wasn't as uniform, because we have older ladies, we have younger ladies, we have ladies with different body types. The wisest thing I did was say, I don't want any part of this discussion about what you're going to wear. Okay? One of my mature, experienced ladies, I said, you go meet with all these ladies, and they hooted and howled and came up with something that they all liked. We had a lot of positive comments, particularly about the guys' uniforms, because they were more uniform. It was easier to do that. It was very well received by the kids. The initial discussions with the staff when I brought this idea up, it was a hoot. Because I heard the same thing from teachers that I've heard from kids when you talk about uniforms. And some of the people, some of the teachers who've argued for student uniforms, when I heard things coming out of their mouth like, I want to be an individual, it was hard to keep a straight face. But I did. Okay. And eventually they all got there. It was pretty funny. This spring, the secondary teachers decided next year they want to keep up with the uniforms. And I'm really glad that they did that. I thought it was a great example. Okay, next I want to move on to the Knights Festival, Spirit Week. Years ago, we started a Spirit Week at Logos School. The motivation behind that was really good. It was started for good reasons. We had a small student population, and there were lots of things that we didn't have. Okay, we didn't have any activities for our older students. We didn't have any sports teams. We didn't even have drama. So one of the parents decided, you know, we could have a Spirit Week. The intent of the Spirit Week, as I remember, was to plan something during the long weeks of winter. It would create a bit of a recess from work. It would lighten the spirits of the students. And in that, I think we were successful. We were really successful. Spirit Week included assemblies that have focused on school spirit. In later years, after we'd started an athletic program, the seniors would teach cheers to the younger kids during the assemblies. Two assemblies intended just for fun included skits with representatives from each class, pie eating contests, for example. The assemblies were fun. I mean, the kids enjoyed them. I have to confess, I really enjoy hearing the kids laugh together. The student council had the responsibility for planning the events of Spirit Week, and as part of their planning, they would select two or three themes each year for dress-up days, Twins Day, Western Day, whatever, the traditional stuff of homecoming weeks. And some of the teachers would even join them in dressing up with the kids, which the kids enjoyed. As part of the week, each class created a poster promoting class spirit. You know, this is why the juniors are the best. Posters were judged to show which one was the best. The event that became the most controversial was the final assembly of the week. For 5 years, we concluded Spirit Week with an interpretive dance assembly. Each class would pick a song approved by me, and they would choreograph a dance routine or a dramatic interpretation of the song. 1 year, the staff participated. They did a dramatic interpretation of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. And I think Mr. Garfield was the judge, if I remember correctly, in the staff deciding what that song was really talking about. Some of the performances were really quite good. There was a group of seniors who did an interpretation of a Beach Boys song called Kokomo. The junior class actually won Spirit Week one time. That's never supposed to happen. They did a skit to Leader of the Pack. The junior boys were riding tricycles around the stage, wearing jeans and white t-shirts. It was well rehearsed. It was well done. Typically, the junior high classes did things that were pretty lame because they were junior high kids. Okay. The assembly, the interpretive dance assembly, it'd be one of the three best attended assemblies of the entire school year. I think the last year we had it, there were probably 60 people there total, in addition to all the secondary students and the teachers. We had parents and alums, and they knew when the interpretive dance assembly was, and they'd come to watch. Okay, a few years ago, we started making some changes in Spirit Week. We added to the Spirit Assemblies with two new assemblies, each with a specific focus. One assembly, and these were ideas that came from one of our teachers, they weren't mine, one assembly that we started was a Thanksgiving assembly. And the purpose of this assembly was to encourage an attitude of thanksgiving for the blessings students receive at Logos. We let the student council pick the speakers. Usually two students, sometimes one of those students is an alum, someone who's recently graduated, and they have a lot of credibility with the kids. It's so powerful to have a peer come and encourage them to be thankful for what they're receiving. They can communicate in a way that I can't. The speeches are short. Oh, they also ask a couple of teachers to speak to the kids. The speeches are short and reflective, but they encourage an attitude of thanksgiving. Nobody is expected to come up and say Logos is perfect. Okay, that's not the point. But they are expected to point out the blessings that God has bestowed upon the students at Logos. And the talks lead to praise of God. They lead to thanksgiving to Him for the good things that He's given us and to praising His name. The assemblies, those Thanksgiving assemblies have been delightful, and they are one of the highlights of the school year. They are precious. We also have a Founders Day assembly each year. At that assembly, one of the founding board members is asked to speak to the secondary students about the founding vision for Logos School. The purpose is to remind the kids about the initial hopes and plans for the school. What brought this group of people together in the first place? What did they believe God was calling them to do? Okay, it's a way of informing the students about why things are done a certain way. It also becomes another way of reflecting on God's faithful provision to the school through the years. Remember the time when we didn't have a building. Remember how God provided. Remember the time we didn't have a teacher. Remember how God provided. I mean, it just leads people back to God's leading and how He answered prayer, and again, it leads to praise of Him, not to praise of the school. These assemblies are profitable, and they're really valuable. Spirit Week also includes a poster contest. I mentioned initially that this was a contest to make the best class poster. After bad experience, instead of promoting class spirit, putting down other classes, we changed the way we were running the poster competition. The posters now have to show school spirit, not class spirit. The past 3 years, the posters that the senior class have done have been incredible. This year, the seniors completed a poster. It's actually done on canvas. It's probably 8 or 9 feet tall. It's got a huge picture of a knight on a horse on the front. A couple of the seniors put 50 to 60 hours into this thing. They started in Christmas. It's now hanging in the gym, and it's a treasure. And the posters just keep getting better and better every year. And that's pretty much how things were until this past year. There were two problems with Spirit Week. The first problem was that the activities of Spirit Week weren't distinct enough. They were not distinct enough. They were too similar to the events, some of them, of a public school homecoming week. They were too close. There wasn't anything immoral about the events, though they weren't distinctly Christian enough. Okay, finally, the other problem was the activities of Spirit Week weren't distinctly Logos. Okay. The other problem that I mentioned with Spirit Week was that it was clouding the view of people in the area, their view of what was really going on at Logos School. You know, such a small part of the school year, but was given such importance in the mind of people who knew a little bit about the school, but not a lot. People were making judgments about Logos based on what they heard about Spirit Week, and as much as I enjoy hearing the kids laugh and think it's good to have a break from their labor, as much as it was building student morale, the price tag for the event simply became too high. That wasn't worth it. I was given a challenge at the end of Spirit Week 2 years ago by my boss to explain how every part of Spirit Week fulfilled one of the parts of our school vision statement or our philosophy and goal statement. Okay, think about meeting that test for a moment. If asked to, could you defend or articulate how every event that is traditionally a part of your school calendar fulfills one of your school goals, or it's related to your school vision statement? Now, you might argue, and I might agree, that it isn't necessary that each and every one of your events meet that test, but it's interesting to think about, and I think a good exercise. Most events should. We ought to be able to say, this is why we have this event. This is how it relates to one of our school goals. I didn't receive any other instruction about what to do. I got, this is what you have to do. Here's what you can't do. But you're going to have to figure out what it is that you can do. I didn't know how we were going to do this, to be quite honest. I knew there were parts of Spirit Week that I couldn't defend. Okay? According to our school goals, vision statement, and philosophy, I wouldn't even try. Nothing in our vision statement talks about student morale, even though when we got our ACCS accreditation, the high morale of the students was something that we were commended for. First, I had to figure out, why have this event? Why have Spirit Week at all? That was really difficult. And I went through the summer in the early part of the school year, and I didn't say anything to our teachers or our kids. I didn't want to say anything until I had something positive to tell them. I wanted to have a vision for what we were going to put in its place. I didn't want to just say, we're not going to have this anymore. I had to articulate a new vision for Spirit Week, not just say, we aren't going to do this and we aren't going to do that. So I was really stumped. One day, it was the second week of school, I was watching the students load on the buses for an icebreaker activity we have in the fall. We go to a park nearby, we play some large group games. And the purpose of this event is to welcome the kids that are new to Logos and get help them meet some of the older kids, the kids that have been at Logos. And before we left, we're standing on the front lawn watching the kids load up on the bus, and one of my teachers comes up to me, and this was before we left for the day. That was encouraging. She said, this is a good day. Like I said, this is before we spent the day with the kids. She said, it's one of our festival days at Logos School. And that was what I needed to hear, a festival day. Okay, this was the clue that I needed to help me figure out what to do. If Spirit Week was going to remain on our calendar, it was going to have to change into a festival. Okay, and I'm thinking here the festival, the model is the festivals in the nation of Israel. I mean, you're familiar in the Old Testament with the way God has the Israelites participate in different festivals as a way of helping them remember. He had a festival because didn't want them to forget something that he'd done, a way he'd been faithful to them in the past. If we turn Spirit Week into a festival, it could serve an important purpose and meet the test that I had been given. Okay, but we're obviously not a community of ancient Hebrews. Okay, we are Christians, but we are Christians associated with a particular school, Logos School, and at Logos we are knights. So this was a community of Logos knights. So Spirit Week became the knights' festival. Okay, and a number of decisions about the festival followed from that line of reasoning and from those Old Testament models. One of the chief characteristics of a festival in ancient Israel was there was a cessation from work. You stopped working. Okay? So during the night's festival, I told the teachers, we aren't going to assign homework this week. It came the week following the end of the first semester. Teachers were going to lose some class time so that students could participate, could plan to participate in some of the activities during the week. We kept the Founders Day Assembly. We kept the Thanksgiving Assembly. Those activities fit with our new model, with our new idea of a festival. The dress-up days were gone. Okay, they were fun, but indefensible in my mind. I couldn't invent the argument to defend them. So we didn't have Twins Day anymore. We had two dress-up days. On one day, the students dressed up nice, dressed up. Guys wore shirts and ties, and the ladies were encouraged to wear dresses. On the second, we told them they could dress in a kind of medieval costume. They could dress as knights or ladies or pages or squires or whatever. We kept the poster competition. We gave each class time during the week to work on their poster that displayed school spirit. The interpretive dance assembly and the spirit assemblies with their goofy activities, those were gone. Okay. In their place, we thought of a poetry competition. We thought of a declamation. In declamation, it was a debate over a simple topic, and I can't remember the exact phrase, but we wanted to pick something the kids were all familiar with, and they all read some of Mark Twain, so was Huck Finn right not to turn Jim in, who was a runaway slave, back to the authorities? Okay, that was the topic for declamation. So it's a mini debate. And they didn't know before the contest which side they would have to argue. Okay, and we talked about the poetry competition and the declamation. One of the teachers said, you need some kind of a physical activity during the night's festival. That's all for the kids who are the brightest, but you need something to show physical strength. So we decided we would have a sword fight for the boys only. And then we added a feast, and we had a short dance at the end of the feast. The boys got to make swords out of plastic pipe, PVC pipe, and pipe insulation. If you look up Boffers, B-O-F-F-E-R-S, on the web, you'll find all kinds of places that tell you how to do this. We had a sword fighting tournament, and the winning participants received reproduction swords. And I remember when I called, I found a guy who sold swords in the area, reproductive swords, replicas of lots of different eras. He said, "My wife asked me, are you sure you want to give high school students swords?" And I said, yeah, I think that'll be fine. But she was a little concerned, wondered what I was thinking. We had real detailed construction rules for how you could construct the swords. We didn't want anybody to get hurt, obviously. We had specific rules for how the sword fight would run. We had practice the day before. This is a legal blow. That's not a legal blow. We had a referee for each match to make sure no one would be injured. Their favorite part, we called it blow calibration. I went up and another teacher went up and we let them hit us on the thigh. No, that's too hard. You can't hit that hard tomorrow. Okay? They enjoyed that. But you can imagine, the sword fight was a great success. I mean, the guys had a great time. We decorated the gym for the feast. Each table had one teacher or administrator assigned to it. We started with a processional. Each teacher or administrator called the names of 10 students to come and join them at their table. All the seating was pre-assigned. We mixed all the kids up. The fare, the food was pretty simple. Meats, cheeses, bread. All of it was already on the table when the kids got there. During the meal, we ate for a while. Then each class presented the poster that they had made to all the rest of the kids. Also, each class had to prepare some type of entertainment to entertain the rest of the students during the feast. A couple classes did a short skit. Drama is an important part of Logos School. One class sang two hymns. One class had an instrumental performance by some of the kids. And the staff sang a madrigal piece. At the end of the feast, the students danced two dances that were rehearsed during the week. I think one was a reel and one was a polka. And finally, the senior class had the responsibility of writing a charge that would be read to the rest of the student body. The idea being this charge would be recorded in a book. And every year we would bring the book back out during the feast that's part of the Knights Festival, and the charge from the class of 2002 will be read again. And the senior class will add a new charge every year. Okay. The poetry competition and the declamation weren't great successes because those were foreign to the kids, but we built enough momentum, it didn't flop, that I think we'll build on it next year. I think it'll be easier. It was a big change. Wasn't an easy change. Change never is, but it was worth it. There's a school in Spokane who heard what we were doing with the Knights Festival, and they made similar changes. They didn't do what we were doing. They had a reenactment of a Civil War battle. They also had a dance. But they reasoned in the same way. How can we celebrate in our community? And came up with some different ideas, and it also went very well. The last change that we made this year, we wanted to emphasize protocol throughout the year. We have a protocol event every year for our students in grades 9 through 12. And they have 3 or 4 hours of instruction during the week on manners and etiquette. How you conduct yourself when you're at a formal meal. How you handle introductions with adults. Those kinds of things. Which fork do you eat with at what part of the meal? The last couple of years, we realized the kids were always really well behaved on protocol night. But there wasn't a lot of transfer from the protocol training they got during that event to the rest of the school year. Okay, it wasn't connecting. They didn't practice at school all year what they would do for protocol night. So we talked about that during staff orientation. What is it that we can encourage the kids to do? How can we create more opportunities to have them practice this throughout the year? Well, why do you teach etiquette and manners? It's love in the trifles. It's love in the details. Etiquette has to do with loving your neighbor, thinking of them before yourself. So we taught the kids in terms of relationships. First of all, we said, how can we encourage the kids to show respect for adults? That was the principle. The application was at the beginning of each class period, the bell rings, the kids all stand next to their desks. The teacher then greets the students and instructs them to take their seats. Why are they standing? As a way of showing respect for the teacher who's in the front of the room. And it's really humbling to have the kids do that for you. You know that they're told to do it, but it's, the response in the teacher is one of appreciation to the kids for their kindness. It also has the unanticipated side effect of starting the class period with all the kids being quiet. So you start with the attention of all the kids, and that change worked really well. We also asked the kids to stand whenever an adult visitor or school administrator entered the room. In some parts of the country, you're thinking, well, of course, we've been doing that all along, but in the Northwest, things are more casual, and that's not something that comes naturally to the kids or to the adults. It did disrupt lessons, but it's a pretty short disruption, and a lot of the adult visitors would mention how nice that was to have the kids show them respect by standing when they entered the room. And that was the reason we did it, to teach them to show respect for older adults. We also thought about another relation. How can we encourage the boys to think about the way that they treat the young ladies? Okay, we asked them to do what they'd done on protocol night, hold the door open for the girls when they're leaving or entering the room. When you leave class, wait until all the girls are out before you leave. When you go to your lockers and there's a big crowd at the lockers, guys, let the girls get their stuff out first, and then you go up to the lockers and get your stuff. One other situation we had, we talked about seating at assemblies. Okay, we have to set up folding chairs for our assemblies. Guys, we'd like you to make sure all the girls have a seat. If we have moms come into the back of the room, if you have female teachers in the back of the room, go take a chair and make sure that they're at least offered a place to sit. Okay. We wanted to teach the young men to care for ladies and show proper respect toward older women. Okay, and that went really well. The kids weren't resistant to that at all. They just hadn't been taught that that was what they ought to do. How do we make the changes? We started by discussing the changes in an administrative meeting with the superintendent, the secondary principal, and the elementary principal. We identified the broad topics. Like we said, okay, we want more application of protocol throughout the school year. And we stopped there. Then we went with the teachers, and I worked with the secondary teachers and said, what specifically are we going to do? I have 3 days of staff orientation before the school year begins. Most of the staff orientation I give to the teachers to do their own planning, because they need time to do that. But we also, I wanted their input about what are we going to change and how are we going to enforce it, because consistency is so important at the secondary level. Okay, I didn't ask the teachers if they wanted to make changes about etiquette and manners. I said, I've been directed to do this. Help me figure out how we should do this. What would be the best way? And we came up with some specific ideas and common ideas of what we were going to do so we could be consistent. And I wrote down all these decisions and the guidelines because we'll forget them a few months into the year and gave them back to everybody. I talked to you about the staff dress code. You know, when you make a lot of changes in the school clothing guidelines and the kids come the first day of school and they see the teachers in a uniform, it takes a little bit of air out of the balloon for some of the kids who have a tough time with those, because the staff is modeling the thing that you're asking the kids to do. In terms of communication with parents, not a lot of direct communication from the school. Most of the communication at Logos comes through direct mailings. We mailed home some information. The superintendent, Tom, sent a letter to all the parents outlining broadly what was coming. He did that in the summer. We're going to make some changes. Here's some area we're going to make changes in. But the rest of the communication for the parents came to them through their students. Logos isn't especially exemplary in that area of communication, and we could do a lot better. How do we communicate to the students? Two ways. In the area of manners and etiquette, we didn't enforce those rules on day one, because we had some other changes that we were making and we didn't want to overwhelm the kids. So I waited until October, till I had a free assembly when I could teach the kids the context for those things. I didn't want to just give them a list of rules. Okay, open a door for a lady. I wanted to be able to talk about why. Why are we going to do this, thinking as Christians? How can we show respect for young women? What does the scripture teach young men about how to relate to young ladies? And then here's an example of this. This is why we're doing this. So we waited until October till we could tell them, this is why we're going to ask you to do this, before we asked them to do this. So, and that worked well in terms of communicating with them what we wanted to do, how we were thinking as Christians. So sometimes it's better to be patient when you're making a lot of changes. And we were patient on that one. You have a better chance of implementing change successfully. But sometimes you just go ahead and do it. Changing Spirit Week was probably the most challenging thing I had to face last year. You know, Spirit Week, traditional activities, what happens when you're a junior? You're looking forward to, I get to be in that activity when I'm a senior. And there's an expectation with it. They think it's now my turn. And that can create high student morale, which is something that's characteristic of Logos. Our kids work hard, but they're cheerful about it. And I'm not sure how we got there completely, but I don't want to mess that up. Okay? Spirit Week was the most important event on the student council's to-do list. Okay? They had a lot of ownership for Spirit Week. So once I had finally figured out a positive vision of what we were going to do with my teachers, I met with the secondary teachers, and we went over this because I knew I needed their support to make this happen. After that, I took one shot at going to the student council to explain to them things are going to change, and here's what we're going to do in its place. And I was naive and thought we would be okay because I thought, a sword fight, that's really cool. How could anybody not get excited about that? I wasn't negotiating with the student council. I was informing them. And I hoped that they would catch the vision and jump in. Yeah, how can we help plan that? That sounds good. Or have you thought about this? But unfortunately, they just quite didn't seem to get it. Okay, they wanted to put the new wine into the old wineskins. They wanted to hold on to some of the old activities. Okay, well, is there any way we can have that interpretive dance assembly? No, you don't get it. Exactly. So I made a decision at that point just to go ahead and implement it on my own. I left the student council out. I announced to the student body what we were not going to do. At the same time, I told them what we were going to do. I made both announcements at the same time. It was too important. Making this change was so important that I decided I need my best chance of making sure that this is successful, and I don't have time to try to convince them that this is a good idea. Okay, so sometimes you tell the kids in advance, this is why we're going to do it, like we did with etiquette. Sometimes you do it to them, and we will spend the next year explaining to them more about why we did it. Okay, and teaching them, because I want them to know the reasons why we did it. Change is really an interesting sociological experiment. It reveals character in your kids when you impose. It reveals character in us when we have to face change. There were three kinds of students. There were kids who made a decision, a principal decision, to be cheerfully obedient. You know what? I may not be completely persuaded, but this has been explained to me as what we're going to do, and I had a number of seniors do this, and we're going to jump in with both feet, and we're going to be cheerful, and we're going to do it. Okay? And they saved us. And then we had the kids that were compliant, but I don't think we convinced them. I mean, if you asked them which they thought was better before we had it, they probably would have said Spirit Week. But they're compliant kids. And then we had some who resisted. We had a few who pouted. Okay, they didn't participate in the sword fight. They wanted to after they saw it, but beforehand they didn't. A group of seniors really saved us this year because they chose to be principally obedient. Okay, they didn't complain. They didn't grumble. They didn't drag their feet. They didn't have sour attitudes. They just said, man, let's embrace this. Okay, there were three boys that wore Scottish kilts. You know, they've seen Braveheart. Hi, I get to be William Wallace. And they will get to wear their kilts to school. You know, that kind of thing. Without their participation, we would have struggled to make all the changes that we wanted to make. You know, think about it. How do you force somebody to have spirit? I'm going to make you have fun, okay, today. You can't do that. And by the end of the year, I think we've made the change. I had notes from seniors saying, I wish we'd gone to Nice Festival sooner. And even some of the kids who weren't persuaded at the beginning wrote articles in the student newspaper about what a good thing this was. My staff was encouraged. I heard a lot of positive comments from the teachers. I continued to hear positive comments from them about the change in culture. Enrollment hasn't gone up. I didn't really expect it to. Okay, not because of this. The perception of the school, I think, has improved. I think it'll take some time for word to get out. Okay, for people to get more of a favorable impression. The change was difficult, took a lot of effort. When I first got the memo, I told you it didn't tell me what to do, it just told me what not to do and the test that I had to meet. And I didn't do this as quickly as I should have, but I tried to model what I wanted the kids to do when I told them how things were going to change. I chose to submit to authority. I had lots of refutations I wrote in my mind. Well, no, you said this, but I can say that, and that's the boss. And if I have to submit to authority if I want the kids to learn to submit to authority. And so I just laid those down. It took a while, but God really blessed that in saying, okay, that's a hard test. How can I make everything connect to our philosophy? Man, I don't know. Lord, help me with this.